Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Throw it in. Waiting. Kuminga flashes. Curry comes to get the ball. Pajemski can't find anybody. Throws it to Curry. Curry back to Pajemski for the win. Blocked away. Ball game's over. And the Rockets have won. The Warriors are standing around. Draymond Green, Steph Curry. The Rockets are celebrating. And this is a tough loss. And the streak is over. 15 consecutive wins against the Rockets.
Dub Nation, it's the voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Odyssey app, that's where we live, okay? If you haven't subscribed to the show yet, do it. Willard and Dibbs, Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, check out our other shows always. Subscribe there, too. Steiny and Goo and Bonte and Joe, as all of those shows reacted to yet another fourth quarter collapse. And that's what we're getting to. Like, what stood out to each of you as far as what was really going on at the end of that game last night? What caused it? 888-957-9570. And all I was getting at earlier is really this. I think that there should be room to separate both things. If you're a fan of a basketball team and your team loses, every single time you're going to be able to, after the game, go, the refs, that call, and there was that call. Like, we haven't even brought up the one where Steph's arm got slapped so hard that his shot came up 3 feet short. There should be an NBA rule. If Steph misses by 3 feet, it's a foul. Like, that's not a real thing. Yeah. That doesn't happen. So obviously there's always things that get missed, and I think we bake that into the okay cake. Like, they're human beings, so that's okay.
Right.
But same thing is true the other way. I don't think just because if the refs do something that's worth discussion, it's a little bit too much of a catch-all for me to be like, well, no, let's not talk about the refs because your team made X, Y, Z mistake. Of course they did.
Sure.
They're human too, and yes, they messed up a bunch of ways down the stretch.
He's allowed to say whatever he wants in his press game, his post-game press conference, and as he's said to us before, and you and I know this from interviewing him 30 or 40 times or however many times we've interviewed him, he is one of the most eloquent, well-thought, like, nothing comes out as accident speakers in the world.
Just a comfortable talker.
Forget sports, but he's smart and he delivers messages. He doesn't come off emotionally and think, oh God, why did I say that? Everything he says is thought out and measured and not rehearsed, but it's honest, and this is part of it. But I look at, you know, and I know he's not going to go on on the press conference and say, you know, that pass from Draymond to Kuminga, that's unconscionable. And Steph shooting the ball that early, that's unconscionable.
What an idiot.
Right. He's not going to do that. 22 turnovers, that's unconscionable. But I do think when he goes to the podium in the post game, yes, he's still upset. And he should be. The referees blew that. They should have granted a timeout. They shouldn't have called a foul with 3 seconds to go in the game and gave the Rockets free throws. But I do think that Steve goes to the podium and he leads with that because he's upset, but also because he knows that there are other issues that he can't discuss.
Yeah, but I don't think he's scared to discuss those. It's like you just said, like he's comfortable in all of those scenarios. But anyway, I'm excited in this moment because what I've been going for 3 years is finally here. Grandy, can you cut the part, just spotlight it where Dibs goes, the referees blew it. Can we just have that? I'd like to have that going forward in my life because I feel like it's going to come up again.
I'll try my best.
Thank you, Grandy. I appreciate you. Love you. All right, Bobby in Los Altos. Hi, Bobby. Thank you for calling Willard and Dibs.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Look, yeah, Dibs, you know how much I hold you in high regard, and I love you, but I know you guys are out of studio today, but you hearing you triggered, especially, you know, in that hotel, it sounds especially angry and scary listening on the radio. So I'm almost glad you guys went on commercial break because you seem a little calmer. That being said, can I just say one thing? I know you're an intelligent man, Dibs. Last Friday, New York Times crossword puzzle, one of the clues was NFL linebacker blank Greenlaw. So just tell Dre, welcome back, and he made a New York Times crossword puzzle. As Woo! It relates to the game.
What day of the week was that, Bobby?
I think you said Friday.
That was a Friday, my yeah, man. Friday.
That's second a tough puzzle. The Friday puzzle is brutal. I won't even try the Sunday. The Sunday is like a 3-day adventure, but the Friday, they're out to get you, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, I apologize. I'm going to have to correct you. Saturday's the hardest day. Sunday's the biggest. But it's like a Thursday
gotcha.
Level. But Saturday yeah. is the hardest. Hey, so as it relates to maybe sports, so the basketball game, this is what I want to say. There's been a lot of talk today about how some, you know, Curry's had a brain fart or all this stuff. You know, I think that if you look at that play, he sort of does, I'm going to call it a hezzy. I don't know what else to call it, to drive. Brooks backs off, and then he has a step back in what I consider for Curry, an open three. I mean, he kind of did the same thing in the gold medal game of the Olympics when he had Durant and Curry hanging out on the, and LeBron hanging out, but he took the shot. So I don't think it was a bad shot. And the only reason we keep vilifying and demonizing him right now is because he missed the shot. But I don't think that was a bad shot at all for what he can do. And the fact that Brooks stepped back and gave him space. Now, you know, as it relates to the last call, the only thing that I found kind of weird about it was that J.K. was already on the ground. Usually when you get a foul call, it's because someone's standing up and they jump on the people that are on the ground. But J.K. was already on the ground for, like, I don't know, a half second,
yeah.
You know, second and a half. And then they called it. So that was weird. And then finally, I don't really get Coach Kerr. First of all, it seemed like he was crying. His nose was all red. But when he says it's a billion-dollar industry and people's jobs are on the line, is his job on the line? The only people's job that was on the line is maybe the ref. So that's the only part of me that made no sense. So that's all I got to say. I just drove by Great America Parkway in 101. I'm sorry I can't be there, but go Niners. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, Bobby, thank you. I don't think he's talking about himself or even the refs when he says jobs are on the line. Jobs are on the line. You have to win basketball games. Players' jobs are on the line. Anything. The whole validity of the whole thing is on the line. It's just a comment. And his nose was red because it's Christmas and he was trying to blend in with the floor. But the one thing...
I think, Bobby, the one point he made is about Steph.
Steph's shot.
Yeah, it's too soon.
It's too early.
Yeah.
Like
that shot's going to be there for him anytime, right?
Well, I don't know about that. Here's what I noticed. Did you watch Steph in the locker room when he talked to the media? There was a twinkle in the eye when they asked him about this. Here's what I noticed. I can only translate. I'm guessing. But they asked him, was it too soon?
Or did you feel like it was a good shot? And I'm paraphrasing, but his answer was basically both.
Yeah.
So, but the twinkle in his eye said to me, you guys, I'm Steph Curry, and I can't stress enough to you that that's a layup to me. When I see that in an NBA game, my body motion, my muscle memory tells me I take that, because that, when left open, is a layup to me. And so I don't...
It's 40%.
Yeah, I don't blame... Well, I mean, 40%. Maybe that particular one is 70%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. But I could, in his eye, he kind of grinned in like, you guys, you don't get it. Like, in my life, when I'm confronted with that, I make that shot. Period. And he missed it, so you have to live with the consequences. But, again, I get why he did it. But you're right. It's too soon. It's too soon. I know this is not fair to live life this way, but it is classically that shot. If you take it, you have to make it.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, you've had a whole game of shot clock violations, and if you were to take a shot clock violation here, that would have been the best of the then seven shot clock violations.
Better than any missed shot.
Correct.
Is a shot clock violation.
There's 12-8 to go when he shoots it, and there's 9 on the clock. So even if you just dribble, 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 and do nothing, or like you said, with 1 on the shot clock, you hoist it as high as you can toward the rim, and if you hit the rim, well, it's game over. And if you airball it, well, then Houston's got 3.7 or 3.8 or whatever to then go out and try to beat you with a bucket.
I mean, I know that, and it's real easy for us to be like, yeah, just stay. I mean, the Rockets are trying to steal the ball. They're descending on you. They're very, very good defensively. But I will say this, for whatever it's worth, I don't know how many of you were watching on TV. Were you watching online? Were you listening on 95.7 The Game? Fitz and Kalena were literally saying this as the possession started. As the possession started, they're saying out loud, the Warriors, they're not fouling them. The Warriors can hold this for as long as possible because you can take it almost all the way down and then fire a shot. They're saying this, and as they say it, Steph's like, pow, gone. And you're like, they were like, whoa, there's 11 seconds left. So this is, I hope it doesn't sound like hindsight is 2020. The broadcasters were aware of this, so I'm thinking Steph and Steve Kerr and Draymond Green are aware of it too. They're basketball brilliance.
No doubt. And, you know, if you're Steph, you know you do need to take a shot before the game is over because of the way the clock is. And so you're thinking about, you know, an open shot, and you take it. One other bit of news. Congratulations to you and to me.
What'd we do?
Warriors Live. You were over 2.5 threes for Buddy Hield.
Nailed it.
I was over 19.5 for Kuminga.
And he got
20.
And he made his last free throw.
He missed the first.
I was sitting there.
I was
he
too.
He missed the front end. I'm like, this is a big old free throw right
fade
now.
Fade the Dibber, dude.
Splash.
You got to fade that, man.
Speaking of fade the Dibber, we're going to need that pretty soon.
Oh, the pick is in.
The Niners play the Rams tonight. We are here. We are at Levi's Stadium, and we are going to start getting you ready for it with some unbelievable voices on this game. First and foremost, NFL Network, former defensive back, Bucky Brooks, who is fantastic on all things NFL. And by the way, I do believe is starting to feel some Niners optimism based on what he saw last week. Well, we'll dig in a little bit more because he will join us next. Our own man on the Niner beat, Jake Hutchinson, later on this hour. We're at the Hilton in Santa Clara getting ready for the game. It's the kickoff show brought to you by Habas Law, and it's Willard and Dibbs.
The
World and Divvy
on 95.7 The Game.
It is the kickoff show brought to you by Habas Law, and we are live in Santa Clara at the Hilton getting ready for what even Dan Dibley calls a must-win.
That's a must-win, Mark.
Oh, my goodness!
Yeah, it's almost a double must-win, but the Rams do have a little bit more of a cushion, so if the Niners lose this one, they're in kind of the Warrior state, real trouble.
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody in the NFC West could be in a big old bucket of who knows what, depending on how things go this weekend after tonight. But the Niners certainly need it. We're streaming live on Twitch and YouTube.
Twitch.tv/957TheGame, YouTube.com/957TheGame. You can watch the show there. It's all powered by First NorCal Credit Union. And as we get ready for this one and the return of Dre Greenlaw to the football field tonight, maybe that means one thing physically and something completely different emotionally. Would love to talk that out with someone who's been in an NFL locker room. I have an idea. How about Bucky Brooks? Let's go out to the River Islands guest line, our good friend from NFL Network and former man on the field in the defensive backfield. Bucky Brooks is with us live on Willard and Dibbs. Hey, friend, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. What's going on, guys?
Bucky, what does this mean to the 49ers? What kind of an emotional boost is Dre Greenlaw back on the field?
It'd be a huge pick-me-up. He is someone who was their emotional leader. You saw that he played with an edge. You saw what kind of energy he brought to the defense. So bringing him back tonight certainly helps them. I think Fred Warner will be excited. I think the team will be excited. And you may see a little more inspired effort from that unit.
And when you look at a player coming off of 10 months and an Achilles tear, it's safe to say that he's not going to play a full rack of plays. Do you think the impact will be more of an emotional one as opposed to what the expectation should be for him physically out there on the field?
Well, I mean, well, they cleared him to play. Like, he's probably ready to go. I think they're trying to ease him into the thing. But once people get into the game, particularly an emotional player like Greenlaw, it may be hard to pull him off the field, particularly if he's having a good game or he gets in on the action. I think the coaches probably have a pitch count in mind, but sometimes that can go out the window once he gets to play.
Bucky, you've played on defense in the league, and so I am very curious your take on the defense that Nick Sorensen has run this year. A lot of questions about him from fans, and we understand that coordinators are hard to assess for fans, but it looks very vanilla to us. What do you see?
Well, I mean, that's what they wanted. Last year when Steve Wilks was the coordinator, he was trying to kind of change and do some different things, and the players didn't like that. Shanahan didn't like that. They wanted more of what they had when they had Saleh and when they had D'Amico Ryans, which is more of a static, vanilla style, see ball, get ball, and just kind of let the players play. And so when you get that, you got to execute at a high level because you're not tricking anybody. You're not using a lot of disguise. It's about execution. And right now, the execution hadn't been to the level that you would like. But the simplicity of it all, that's exactly what Shanahan wanted because that's what they've had in the past when they have really good defense.
Okay, so is your assessment that this is a player issue, whatever's going on the defense? This is a player issue, not a coordinator issue.
Well, the personnel is different. When you play a simplistic style and you're saying, hey, we want to keep it simple, let the players play, but then your players have to dominate. And in the past, those previous iterations under D'Amico Ryans and Robert Saleh, they're more talented on the front line. Remember, they used to dominate people with 6, 7, 8 defensive linemen rolling in. They don't have the same pedigree, the same level of talent that they had up front. And when the front doesn't dominate to the level that they dominated in the past, the results are different. And so that's what you're seeing. They're not the same team from a personnel standpoint, which is why the defense doesn't dominate like they used to.
How hard is it then to make those changes in real time? If you're seeing that your front four is not getting home in the pass rush, is it too hard to suddenly become a blitz team? Do you need to have more blitz tendency players in order to change your scheme mid-year?
I mean, it's all like the philosophy, right? So when you play that style, like a lot of it is like we're just going to keep it simple. We're going to run to the ball. We're going to do things that are like sweat equity, right? Hustle, effort, those kinds of things. And so when you start blitzing, now you put players on islands. And when they did that last year with Steve Wilks, as he was trying to transition them into a little different style of defense, the players didn't like that. They gave up some plays. Shanahan may have overreacted to some of the plays that they gave up because they still ranked as the top 10 defense. And so now here you are. You're playing vanilla ice cream defense, but you're not the same talent. You know, you don't have the same team that was superior to others. And so you're seeing a different result on the field playoff.
Bucky Brooks, NFL Network, with us on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. We are live in Santa Clara getting ready for football. Thursday night action, Niners and Rams in what is essentially a must-win for the 49ers. Bucky, what's your take? Are the Niners still, are they still alive? Are they still in this thing?
They're still in it, but, man, they've been dealing with so many issues, right? The Super Bowl hangover is real. You have injuries that have impacted who they are on offense and defense. And then you're trying to find a way. They're trying to gain confidence. That's said, they're still a very scary team because Kyle Shanahan is one of the best play callers in the business. They have enough talent where they can win games if that talent takes over. We just haven't seen the talent take over enough. But if Deebo Samuels and George Kittle decide to play and play at a high level, look, they're dangerous in the passing game. If they can run the football with whatever running back is available to them, it's a problem. And then defensively, a lot of it depends on Nick Bosa dominating. If their stars play like stars, they're still very capable of being a team that can be dangerous. Not necessarily Super Bowl dangerous, but dangerous enough to get into the tournament and make people uncomfortable. But they got to take care of business against what I say is a very good Rams team that's trending in the right direction.
And what do you do to make Matthew Stafford uncomfortable? Is it just getting that A-gap pressure? Is it making it so he can't just be on his spot to make him uncomfortable?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. Like, you not only got to make him comfortable, but you got to make sure you cover those two guys on the outside, Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. They're dangerous. And when they're playing, this is a really good team. They're interchangeable, so they can move around and do similar things. They create a lot of stress because they're physical. They do a really good job in the run game. And then they're outstanding route runners. This is a tough matchup, you know, but it's one where in this rivalry, typically the team that out-hits the other team wins. So I would expect to see a playoff-like intensity around this game. So look for them to try and knock people around, try and disrupt the rhythm by really being more physical than they've been with other teams.
We got maybe a little rain in the forecast, Bucky. Who has the edge with that?
It probably even, because both teams want to run the football. And if it has to be a game where it turns to the run, both teams can do it. The Rams did it successfully against the Buffalo Bills last week. The Niners, that's their calling card. I think it comes down to quarterback play. And I know, like, there are questions about Brock Purdy. Are they going to pay him and what they're going to pay him? This is a perfect showcase game for him. Thursday night, everyone watching, bright lights, big stage. He's going to have to play at a high level. And if he has to do it, he can weather, so be it.
What do you make of Brock Purdy this year? Is it a regression, or is it just him playing at a level where he hasn't had as much help around him?
It's a combination, man. There's not a great quarterback that can play without great players around. And I would say we talked about it in January, I think, when I kind of made some headlines about the route runners and the playmakers and that stuff. Brandon Ayuk is unavailable the whole year, so you lose him. Ricky Pearsall has been in and out. Deebo Samuel hasn't been the same with injuries and those things. And so the pieces around him have not been as consistent, and that impacts the way that he's played. Like, I think he's the same player. And what the Niners have to figure out is, what do you want to pay someone that's at his talent level? They're different degrees in terms of pedigree, you know, the talent and those things. But he's a really good player. He hasn't played as well as he's played in the past, but look, he's still solid for the Niners.
Okay, Bucky, you brought up Debo's name, and you have been outspoken on those wide receivers in the past, and he's having a weird year, and he's frustrated, and he's tweeting about it, and he's had an incident with the long snapper. What's your take on Debo's year? Is this circumstantial, or is he losing a step? Come on, Bucky.
I definitely don't duck the smoke, but, like, he is what he is. He's a playmaker, not a route runner. And so it has to be a concerted effort to make sure that he touches the ball. Now that Christian McCaffrey's out, he needs to touch it more. Why not reprise the role that he did a few years ago? Oh, he doesn't like that. He doesn't like when he has to run the ball like that anymore. So he doesn't want to do some of those things that really made him very successful and very popular in the NFL crowd. So what he has to figure out is, what is he willing to sacrifice? What is he willing to do? And Shanahan has to figure out a way to get him in the game plan early. Debo's no different than most of the wideouts in the league. They have to feel like they're involved early to be able to give you that playmaking ability late. And so you just got to make an effort to get him the ball early so he can feel good and into the game, and then give us the app.
Is man coverage the kryptonite for the Shanahan offense?
Yeah. If you don't have the right personnel on the outside to handle it, because all the condensed formations, the motions, the stacks, the bunches, all the eye candy, yeah, like, man coverage kind of simplifies everything for the defense, but you got to be good enough to cover them. Now teams have figured out that they have an issue against man-to-man, and they're seeing more of it. I told you, like, when the blueprint is out there, it's up to the team, the Niners, to solve that, to answer that. And they have to answer it by being able to attack man coverage. And this year continues the theme, but they haven't been able to consistently do it. And so and some of that is a work in progress. But, yeah, they're going to continue to see man-to-man until they show that they can consistently knock it out.
Bucky Brooks, NFL Network. What's your take on Pearsall?
Look, man, it's unfortunate what happened to him. And you swear it, but like he's a good player. He will be a good player, but there's so many things that were working against him that it's hard to get the rookie contributions. He needs to give them more, but, I mean, like, he had to deal with so much early that it's hard to count on him. Hopefully he can be an X factor in their run. They need him to play. They need him to make plays because they needed another route runner and playmaker that could help them in the passing game. So hopefully he can give them something.
When you look at the Shanahan offense, as everyone likes to refer to it, and McVay runs it, and LaFleur in Green Bay, and it seems like more than half the league is now running it, has it become so commonplace that defenses now have a greater ability to stop it?
Well, the more you see things, the more you get used to it. But all of those guys run different variations, right? So Sean McVay has gone away from more of the outside zone to then doing a more gap scheme where you're seeing the guards and tackles pull. Matt LaFleur runs a different version of it with the running game and those things. So there's some similarities from a philosophical standpoint. They want to run the football. They want to give you a lot of pre-snap motion to get your eyes in the backfield and out of the right place. But, yeah, more people are seeing it, and so you always have to stay one step ahead of the curve. But I still say this. If you ask defense coordinators, they still would say that Kyle Shanahan is one of the more difficult offensive play callers to deal with because he can give you so much, and the personnel matches the scheme. And that's the big thing. The Niners have been successful because the interchangeable parts that they had on offense allowed him to be very creative and imaginative when it came to his exotic stuff.
Do you see someone as having an edge when McVay and Shanahan go up against one another?
No, I think it's even Stephen for a while there. It seemed like Shanahan had the upper hand. You know, it always kind of felt like he treated Sean McVay like the little brother. But little brother struck back. You know, little brother has a team that is coming. They're young. They're not quite where they want to be. But with that quarterback, Matthew Stafford, and those two wide receivers, they're dangerous. And the underrated part of what Sean McVay does is the stubborn commitment to the running game. He'll run it at you over and over and over again. He's okay with 3 and 4 yard gains. And that running game sets up the big plays and the play action game and those things. So, no, this is a really good matchup, man. It's really good building. Look, it's kind of like playing video games with your brother. You love your brother, but there is nothing better than to beat your brother. There's nothing better than to walk around the house knowing that you dominate little brother or whatever. So that's what this matchup is, and that's what it'd be tonight.
Yeah, it took me 30 some odd years, but I finally caught my older brother, and there's been no looking back ever since, Bucky. And no sweeter nectar than taking down that older brother if you have one.
True. I'm an older brother, though, so I've always been the one on top. But I get what you're saying.
I'm sure your record is near unbeaten, and that's how it is with you older brothers. Hey, Mark and I have had this discussion about special teams all year because the Niners have been terrible at special teams. When you look at a team that struggles with that third phase of the game, where do you assign the blame generally?
There are a few different things. A lot of it is personnel-driven. Right. So the guys that play on special teams are your backups or your key contributors on offense and defense. How much experience do they have with special teams? If you have a lot of young players coming straight from the college game, they've never done it. So you ask them to do something new, and it's kind of like learning on the fly. If you have a lot of injuries, you have backup players, so it might be their first time really playing prominent roles in the kicking game, and there's some uncertainty, and there's going to be some bust and those things. And then it has to be prioritized. It has to be talked about. It has to be emphasized. You have to convey the message as the head coach that this is just as important as offense and defense to get people to buy in. It's hard sometimes to get people to buy into the kicking game because there's not that immediate glory that comes along with making plays on offense or defense.
Bucky, you said earlier that the Niners still, if they take care of business, they still can be a threat to get into the tournament and maybe make noise, but then you were like, nah, but not Super Bowl stuff. So if I say Lions, Eagles, Packers, Vikings, is that it? Did I just say the NFC winner, or do you see anyone else in this conference as having a chance?
Nah, that's it. I think it comes out of those guys, and I think the NFC North is loaded. They cannibalize each other. I would say the Lions, if they get home field, they can be tough. But the injuries have caught up. When they have more injuries than anybody else when it comes to their frontline players. The Philadelphia Eagles are the best and the most complete team, but they're fighting. They got their wide receivers fighting because they can't run the football, and they're not throwing it enough. So Those are the two teams. And then I'll keep an eye on Minnesota. The X factor, though, is Sam Darnold. And did y'all know the best quarterback at the building? Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Wow, he's playing great. Is he? In Minnesota. I'm just wondering, did y'all know the best quarterback?
You do want that smoke, don't you, Bucky?
Take it easy, Bucky. Take it easy.
I just saw the guy throw for 5 touchdowns the other day. I don't know. My bad. I just play guys that throw touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, geez, you hate to see that, Sam Darnold out of the building. Hey, when you look at the NFC West, if you were to make a call right now on who wins the division before tonight's game, obviously, do you still think that it's Seattle's to lose?
Just because of the way the schedule breaks out. Like, the Niners have a tough schedule, I think. They have another tough game on the docket.
They got Detroit.
Detroit, but Seattle plays Green Bay and Minnesota the next 2 weeks.
Cool.
Yeah,
I still would say Seattle. I would say Seattle because right now their defense is playing well. And, look, Geno Smith is a bit of a wild card, but that three wide receiver thing they have in the running game is pretty dangerous. But, look, it's a toss-up. But I would say in the driver's seat will be the Seattle Seahawks.
Dibs, I don't know if you know why it is that Bucky Brooks is feeling himself today. Do you know where Bucky Brooks went to college?
I have no idea.
That man right there is a North Carolina Tar Heel.
Oh, wow.
Bucky, what is the Belichick? Are you kidding me?
What? What are you talking about? What do you mean? You want to come to a great program.
He wanted
great things. The framework is all there. Like, I am excited about it. I'm excited about the opportunity to have, like, a really good coach, like, who wants to develop players as the landscape is changing, where college is looking more like the pros. Why not get the greatest coach in pros to come and kind of lead their transition?
Yep.
I like
Who doesn't want to run a football program at a basketball school? Exactly.
I mean, like that. And maybe we're doing a little bonus, got a little. His girlfriend in the grad school. I don't know. Like, that was fun.
That's what I'm talking about.
Undefeated. Men can't talk about Belichick without the girlfriend coming up right now. It's just impossible. It's totally impossible.
I mean, it's such a random thing. And so when people talk about, he can't relate. That's all he had to. He didn't even have to tell the Board of Trustees anything. He's like, have you seen?
Yeah.
See what I'm doing? Like, I'm living the life.
I was telling my partner that just in case he needed a round two, it's a fertile ground if he goes back to North Carolina.
Yeah, North Carolina. No, but I think it's great. I think people make a lot of, like, the age difference and can he deal and relate with college kids. I would just say this. The disciples from his program, like, Nick Saban has had a lot of success at a collegiate level. You look at what Bill O'Brien was doing up in Boston College. They were having success right away. I just think that blueprint works. And as much as we talk about, like, college players and new generation and what they don't like, all good players want to be coached. And so he may not be right for everybody, but the guys that want to go to the next level, the guys that want to learn how to play the right way, he's going to be attractive and appealing to them and to their parents who also want that from their kids.
Bucky, great to have you, man. I don't know if I'm putting thoughts in your head here, but just listening to you talk, it sounds like you have a slight lean toward the Rams tonight.
No. I mean, like, I don't have a dog in the fight. I would say this. The Niners are desperate, and desperate teams are dangerous. And when you have Dre Greenlaw coming back, an emotional leader, because, like, he could have tipped the scales of balance in the Super Bowl if he plays and finishes that game. Look, that's a big emotional lift. He makes some plays early, a splash play to get that defense going. Look out. So, no, I'm not leaning towards the Rams. I'd actually favor the home team in this. They got to play, though, because it's now or never for the Niners.
Yep. I think that's a fair take. Hey, Bucky, thank you for jumping in, man. We love having you.
All right, man. Appreciate you.
There he goes, Bucky Brooks, NFL Network, former North Carolina Tar Heel, DB in the league for about 6 years. Interesting breakdown of this football game, and it's kind of, not that I wasn't already excited about it, but McVay and Shanahan with a lot more of their toys available than they had last time. It is set up for a hell of a fight tonight.
Yeah, and we always talk about the analytics and the numbers and this and that, and I'm just looking at video of Dre Greenlaw on the field, pregame warm-ups, getting loose. loose, and just the emotional lift and the desperation that the Niners are feeling and having Dre Greenlaw back, all those things have got to help tonight in their cause.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you talked yesterday in that fun conversation we were having about the NBA Cup with regard to what that could do for the Warriors emotionally rather than in the standings, seeing as if you do get to the finals, it doesn't count for the standings. So there's that side of it. I think this is maybe an even better example as to where I don't see how this doesn't give the entire stadium tonight a hell of a lift. Thursday night football, it's going to be, you would figure, defensive kind of tone because of the weather, a desperate game. To have Dre Greenlaw come back is just a hell of a juice boost that's going to be in the whole building tonight.
Yeah, and this guy too, old number 97's out there too, getting
Nick's
loose.
Back.
And so Nick's out there getting loose. You got Greenlaw.
Garendo is in.
Yep, so a lot of emotional lifts, but ultimately the one thing you've got to be able to do is get to Matthew Stafford and make him uncomfortable.
Yep. And by the way, I say that, and we do not have the official active-inactive list yet, so I am ahead of myself. We should have that here very, very shortly, so stay with us because we will immediately break to you. Is Nick Bosa in? Is Isaac Garendo in? They're both expected in, but they need to pass hurdles in pregame warm-ups. Dre Greenlaw is the one who we do know is in. And then, of course, is there a wet ball and can Brock Purdy throw it?
Yeah.
What about that?
Well, I don't think that it's going to rain. It's not raining right now.
Yeah, it's not right now.
Well, in the forecast, and you look at the skies here, it's gray, but it's not the super foreboding sort of gray. And one thing that I know from my many, many years of watching the weather is normally you get wind before you get rain. And right now, the wind is starting to blow a little bit.
A little bit.
But I'm not sensing the storm clouds coming just yet.
I'm looking right now at the National Weather Forecast, and it says, quote, rain likely around 4:30. And then we see green lines through the 5 o'clock hour. It stops for the 6 o'clock hour, and then it comes back a little stronger in the 7 o'clock hour. So this could be one of those games that's one thing in the first half and another thing in the second half. We'll find out. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. This is the kickoff show brought to you by Habas Law. Our man on the Niner beat, Jake Hutchinson, is going to jump in here with us live coming up next, and we will continue the countdown as the Niners play the Rams tonight at Levi's Stadium. And this is Willard and Dibbs.
There are questions around about Brock Purdy. Are they going to pay him or what they're going to pay him? This is a perfect showcase game for him. Thursday night, everyone watching. Bright lights, big stage. He's going to have to play at a high level.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, we're getting closer. We're getting closer, and all guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands, and Lathrop? And we do have an in-person guest stopping by right now.
I'm nervous.
You are?
This guy's big time.
No, I mean...
Big time, and a great voice, too.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a buck.
And this is the kickoff show brought to you by Habas Law. We're live on the scene, Santa Clara, Niners and Rams tonight. And before this very intimidating figure Jake Hutchinson starts talking Niners to us, we can break the news to each and every one of you. A, B, C, yes, yes, yes. Nick Bosa, Dre Greenlaw,
yes,
and Isaac Garendo are all active for this game tonight. Hutch, thanks for coming over. What's your reaction to that and how it affects tonight?
I mean, it's huge, right? It's, are we live?
There we go. Right, try again. Three, two, one.
We're good?
Action. Yeah, we're good.
All right. It's massive. It's massive. I think it's something that having Isaac Garendo back, I mean, that's monumental for them. Nick Bosa, no question. Even if he's just in a rotation, right? Even if Bosa is just on the end, you know, he's just playing pass rush downs. I mean, that's huge for this team because they're not going to blitz a lot, and they need to get pressure on Matthew Stafford. He's a bottom six, bottom ten quarterback when he gets pressured. And the 49ers aren't going to blitz that much in general. Having those guys back is big. And then Dre Greenlaw, he might just be a rotation guy for this first game. But, I mean, that's going to be enormous just from a vibe perspective, having him back.
The vibes are huge. And I was thinking about that in terms terms of rotation, because as it is now, Fred's always out there, and even when they go to a two linebacker and they go to the nickel package, a lot of times it's Devondre Campbell, a little bit of D Winters. Do you think that he'll just be rotating through that? And when they do go to traditional base, which teams don't really run a lot anymore with three linebackers, do you think that he'll get that shot, or will he be rotating into that?
Yeah, that's what I'm interested to see. I mean, this is coming off, I think Devondre Campbell's been playing as well as he has all year long right now. D. Winters played a pretty good game. That said, I feel like if you're bringing Greenlaw back, you want to get him out there. So I would think if anyone's out, it's going to be D. Winters popping him out on those base downs. I think that's probably how they use Greenlaw. It's weird to me if they were to just go full bore, like swap him out for Devondre Campbell or Winters and have him as the will right away on a Thursday night game. I think that's a pretty big assignment against this team coming off an Achilles. But I think it's going to be a rotation. I think it might be on some of those base downs you're talking about.
Hutch, talk to us about Brock Purdy and a wet football.
Oh, boy.
What do you see?
Listen, I think small hands probably don't help, but I do think in general people overreact to that sort of stuff. But he didn't do himself any favors with that fumble, you know, in Buffalo where he just sack fumbled himself. I mean, I'm not going to say he's a great cold weather quarterback or a great bad weather quarterback by any stretch. I think this is a good opportunity if it gets a little dicey for him to prove something. But yeah, there's not a lot of evidence to say, oh, you'd feel inspired with him in a cold weather, rainy game.
Him throwing the ball last week, it sure looked like they were doing a lot more in terms of the vertical routes. He hit Debo with a deep one early and a couple of George Kittle screens, and the Garendo wheel route was big as well. What are you seeing from this pass game now that they're out of the snow?
Yeah, I think there's just a preference to funnel the ball to Juwan Jennings for the most part. I think Juwan Jennings, moving him to X, he knows what he's going to expect out of him. With George Kittle, he knows what he's going to expect out of him. Debo can pretty much run one or two routes. You can send him vertically, or you can really just have him run a drag or a dig over the middle. And that's really what Debo does. I think the passing game, for the most part, has looked better. You know, not including that snow game. I think last week, they also got the best looks that they're going to get from any defense all year. The Bears just gave them, they abandoned their entire defensive scheme, as George Kittle said this week. And they just said, all right, here's a bunch of soft zone. Take whatever you want. I don't think the Rams are going to do that. They're a much more chaotic defense. They're not a good defense, but they are chaotic. So there's a little bit of unpredictability there. I think they run a lot of cover six. We'll see how they navigate that.
Our 49er insider, Jake Hutchinson, is right here live on the scene as we are in Santa Clara getting ready for this game tonight. I want to dive a little deeper on that because, as you said, it's not a good defense. Remember, this is the defense that Juwan Jennings went crazy against in week three and tucked into, I can't tell you, if I had a dollar for every time someone came up to me in the last 3 days and went, this team just beat Buffalo. How are the Niners going to hit right? They gave up a 40-burger to Buffalo, and that's Buffalo. But isn't this a game for the offense? They should be able to attack this defense.
Yeah, it's interesting. If this was a normal Sunday game, I think you expect both offenses to play pretty well. Thursday, I feel like these games have a tendency to get a little sloppy. But yeah, there should be holes for the 49ers to exploit on this defense. The Rams linebackers aren't very good. Their front is really interesting. They've got a lot of young, they've got two young pass rushers that they got out of Florida State. Those guys are really enticing, so you got to be careful there about what they're bringing. But on the back end, they're running, you know, some young safeties. They run three safeties, and they've got, you know, a couple okay corners, but they're not a good defense, right? There are going to be holes there. They are going to play more zone than man. But also, the Rams are a better coach team than the Bears, right? So I would expect them to have a better game plan and probably play a little man, especially against Debo, who cannot beat man coverage, and Juwan Jennings, he wins, but he doesn't really win. Like, he gets just enough separation and has great hands and physicality to make the play. So if I'm the Rams, I'm throwing a lot of man coverage at the Niners and saying, I don't care if we have the dudes. We're just going to see if it works.
Yeah, especially when you look at, you know, Debo, as you said, not great at beating man. And Ricky Pearsall is really the curious one for me because he had a couple of great games and it seemed like he'd broken through and he was ready to roll and be a real threat in the pass game. And now, what, one catch over the last four games? What are you seeing from Ricky Pearsall?
I, I honestly think Ricky looks fine. I watched the All-22 like the sicko that I am, and
nice.
And I see him getting open, and I see a lot of the time the play is either not designed to go to him. He's running a lot of like what Ayuk did in his rookie year, where he's running these clear out routes. He knows he's not part of the play, and other times he is getting open, and the play either takes Brock Purdy somewhere else, or I think because you know Pearsall didn't play a lot in OTAs, didn't play a lot in training camp, kind of like Ayuk at the start of the year. There's not that connection. He'd rather throw it to Jennings or Kittle, who he trusts. He knows where they're going to be. And Pearsall, as much as I have seen him separate and do a lot of those things, he's not trusted yet. Like, he's only been in this offense for a few games. He missed so much time. And I get it from Purdy's standpoint. So, for me, I think he's doing his job for the most part. There's reps he doesn't win in man coverage, but I think there are more that he does. And I just think that's what happens when you're a rookie and you're not trusted, and it's a really complex offense.
While we're on the wide receivers, this is almost stunning to me. You have Deebo Samuel go from a guy who gets the big contract, 25, whatever it is, million per year. He's a superstar. He's a 1,400-yard receiver. He saves two seasons for the 49ers. People chant his name. They love him. And suddenly in 1 year, he is now, quote, lost a step, and as you just said, literally can only run two routes. How did we get here?
Yeah, I think the reality of Deebo as a player is he is limited as a receiver. He's never been a true route-running receiver. And he got paid that same offense that I think they all had the same agent. It was him and Terry McLaurin and DK.
I think
A.J. Brown. And all those guys got paid. And those guys are actually, like, true receivers. What separated Deebo is all the other stuff, right? And all that creative stuff. And I think, one, defenses and schemes caught up. So that's part of it. And, yeah, they're not blocking well for him. But Deebo didn't always need a play to be perfect. Blocked. He was just so explosive, and I think vertically going in a straight line, he's still got that speed, but I do see a lack of burst on him going side to side, making guys miss. He just has not done it effectively, and so all the things that he used to do in the Jimmy Garoppolo offense, funny night for him to come back,
right.
Yep.
is he would catch those short patterns and take it wherever, and also because of the way teams have played man, they haven't gotten those easy looks that benefit Deebo. So I think some of its scheme, some of its defense is adapting, and some of it's him, and I think it's sort of a perfect cocktail of all those things.
Yeah, and especially when you need him the most this year without Brandon Ayuk, and he hasn't been able to deliver as much. Thinking about the other side of the ball with no Malik Mustafa, after I guess he got hurt on that savage hit that he tried to give, but he ended up taking against Swift in Chicago. Jair Brown back in center stage. Where has he gone from last year where he emerged late in the year to now where he's kind of fallen out of favor?
Yeah, it's something where you hoped Jair would be sort of that safety of the future, right? And we saw a lot of positive signs, but Tashaun Gibson also took a lot of the responsibilities off his shoulders. But there were signs. There's reasons to be optimistic. I think there's like a hesitancy there. And as a safety, like, you need to be able, like Mustafa, like, be a speeding bullet, fire downhill when you see something, and shoot your gap. And there is a little bit of a hesitancy with Jair that I think is a problem. And he doesn't have the same speed as Mustafa does. So he doesn't have the speed to make up for some of that stuff, and he's not quite triggering to the ball or to the play as quickly as you'd want him to.
You know what's interesting there, though, with what you just said? If Tashaun Gibson, from a communication standpoint, kind of helped Jair Brown be one thing, is this scenario tonight maybe better for Jair? Because he's not alongside a rookie with Mustafa. He's alongside Hufanga, who is much better with that, somewhat at least.